The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Hold your insulting tongue and mark my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah!
I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yeah, we're back!
Back and better than ever.
That's right. Well, look at what happened after we took off some time, man. Hey.
I blame magic.
Oh, come on. You can't blame magic for that crazy. Second thoughts.
Yeah. Muggle for life.
There might be some deviltry going on, but anyway. Right.
Well, you know. Well, they do. They're trying to get rid of mudbloods. You know, if you're a Harry Potter fan, you know what that means.
So. Thankfully, I don't.
Oh, right.
And I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects at @agent_70 on Twitter.
Yeah. Fighting for the dream for everybody. Watch the video, you know what I mean.
Wish this man a happy belated birthday.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
We also have @RoddyCat on Twitter.
No one thinks like a bad cold, but hey, here nonetheless.
Good job, Roddy. If you're watching the video, tune into theclicknation.com. Is it /live?
Yes.
/live. You will see Roddy Cat all bundled up in his snazzy Black Panther hoodie.
Shout out to Matt Wang 97 for this.
Shout out to Matt Wang.
Appreciate you, man. Oh, no. What's going on? Oh, there we go.
Kind of focus issues.
Yeah, I know. What the hell? Yeah, that's more ways than one.
It's the vibranium in the hoodie.
All right.
And somewhere enjoying a blooming onion, as Agent 70 said before the show, is @PCN_dirt, having a nice dinner with family at Outback.
There you go.
Hopefully we'll join us later in the show.
Shrimp on the barbie.
Go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. And also go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. On the homepage, there's images and links to our social media accounts. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Google+, YouTube. Subscribe, follow, and also subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn Radio. We're also on. We are part of the Cult Little Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us. Do it today. And you can buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise at the CSPN shop. That's shop.cspn.us. Oh, and also, while you're on the homepage of Declick Nation, make sure to sign up for our newsletter. Get people signed up for that.
Nice.
So last week, we missed having an episode because we were too busy going to see Doctor Strange in theaters now.
I want a bargain!
So we live in three separate states, but we all went to view it separately. So
we're all together in spirit, though.
That's right. Technically, I got home in time enough to probably like hop on and do a.
I know, episode. Right?
Well, you guys don't have to commute far to get to your movie theater.
Yeah, I was home like before 10 o'clock.
Pretty much, yeah. It was like 9:30. I was home.
Yeah, specifically like 9:45. Might have been like right at 10, I think.
Yeah, because I'm like when 5 minutes away. I'm like,
when I got like settled in.
That's.
But So I guess first impressions of the film, did we like it, not like it?
Thumbs luckily, up. Actually, yeah, luckily I had time to actually process a little bit because I was coming out of it. I was like, well, I did like it, but it also seemed rather like the visuals were more striking than the story, put it that way.
Yeah.
Even though the story was good.
Yeah, I would say that. I could see that, you know. Let me tell you, it's such a nice. I went with a bunch of people, some friends and friends of that particular friend, you know, like and coworkers. So it was a nice group of people that we've gone to see, you know, a number of Marvel and superhero movies together already. So we already know, you know, who's going to have like stronger opinions. And let me tell you, I saw Batman versus Superman with the same group, and coming out of Doctor Strange, it was refreshing to have like a big smile and grin on my face coming out of that, because I enjoyed what I was watching, as opposed to like, you should have seen the sour pusses that were on everybody's faces when we came out of Batman versus Superman. So it was a huge, you know, huge difference.
I came out of it, I think my first reaction was meh.
Really?
Yeah, it was fine.
I was kind of bored. Like I said, oh yeah, I was kind of borderline that one myself. But thinking about it, I was like, okay. Hmm.
It was a typical Marvel movie. The special effects were nice.
Right.
I need to see it. I guess maybe I saw it in 3D. I didn't see IMAX.
Yeah, which apparently seems to be the way to see it. From
wait, I'm sorry, I missed what you said, Tim. Did you say you did not see it in 3D?
I saw it in 3D, but did not see it in the IMAX 3D.
Ah, I see.
Because we wanted to the theater. We wanted to see it at with the IMAX. Didn't have a assigned seating.
So and you know Tim's fancy, so he got to have his
reverse. Yeah. We didn't want to rush and try to have to get there early and then try to find two seats together. It's like just go to this other theater and select our seats. And it was weird because it was our first time going to this theater, and it was literally four rows in the actual theater part where the screen was. It was like a mini theater, which is four rows. Like it seated maybe like 30 people, and it wasn't even full. So it was like a small, get together of people watching Doctor Strange. Maybe that might have been another reason why I didn't enjoy it as much. The crowd atmosphere and people laughing at the jokes and whatnot you get in a larger theater.
No kidding.
You know, you say that, and I kind of wish we were close enough together to where we could actually go to a place like that and just rally up.
Yeah,
that sounds pretty cool.
That's interesting. Like the 3D IMAX theater I went to isn't the really big fancy one that's up by Lincoln Center, but I think it's a lot closer to the real measurements. But the one I went to had a good crowd. You know, it's pretty boisterous. And I guess I could see where you guys are coming from. But in terms of the criticism that the movie storyline is somewhat formulaic, at this point, we all sort of expect it to be, to a certain extent, like especially if we know it's an origin story. So I'm just looking for a good execution of that and good, at least, characterizations from the actors. That's what I need at this point, because I know that it's like a variation. It's like, you know, instead of Die Hard on a boat, it's Iron Man, but with magic. Right?
Yes.
So that's, and I read that in a couple of, I read that in a couple of reviews, and I was like, what are you guys expecting? But we know this because we're comic book fans, and we know that there, you know, that a lot of these origin stories are twists on somebody else's origin.
Hmm. Actually, there was a plus side to it, because especially as far as like the origin story Marvel movies are concerned, I was thinking as I was driving home and the rest of that night, thinking about where I would place this movie. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I still kind of have it like right under Captain America's first one, and I happen to like Captain America's first one.
I like the first Cap.
Exactly. So I'm like, at this point in the realm of all the movies, it's like... Mm-hmm. 5 or 6, I guess, at this point.
I need to give it some thought, because there's been so many movies now.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to change. And rank them. Yeah, and it changes, and it's going to change. But I'm just saying, as of then, and you know, as of still right now, that's kind of where it is. So I thought it was pretty good for his origin story.
Yeah.
I like the I want to say coming out of it, the villain I enjoyed more than some of the other Marvel villains. But now that I think about it in the moment now, it's kind of like, well... It wasn't really anything special about him.
Wait, Dormammu?
Caelius.
Oh, Caecilius?
Caecilius.
He was just a puppet. That's the thing. And we had to understand that going in.
Getting Dormammu was cool, though.
Yeah.
Except that he could be back by accounts, but by rumors, I don't know. Or there's room for him to come back, I guess.
Oh, Caecilius?
That part, yeah.
Well, spoiler alert now. We're getting into spoiler alert
territory. They seem to kill him and leave him.
Well, no. Well, maybe.
I don't remember what happened to him. What did happen to him?
They ended up with Dormammu, let's just say.
Well, that's right. They became the mindless ones, right? I read that in a spoiler or something. Like when Caecilius
sucked them up,
and yeah, him and the other two or three henchmen, like they turned to having like one red eye or something in their head.
That, yeah. That,
like the mindless minds.
Yeah.
It helps to read Easter eggs articles.
Yeah, right, for the stuff that you missed.
Yeah. Like, another Easter egg I didn't notice at the time was the protector of the New York Sanctum.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. They dropped that. Spoiler alert here, people.
Did they say his name?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I missed it.
Yeah, and I think it's a reference to a certain brother / doctor who is a practitioner of Hungan magic.
Yeah, and I totally whiffed on that at the time. I was like, oh, okay.
Because
all I'm thinking is like, well, damn, so the brother had to get killed for Dr.
Yeah, that's all I'm thinking. And then the staff of one.
I did not see that. I missed that.
In the final battle. I remember the lady holding the stick, but I didn't make the connection.
I remember seeing the wonderful cartoon that Wong was rocking, so I'm like, I caught that one.
What was that reference to?
No, that was remember the one that Wong had when he was fighting at the end, near the end.
Oh yeah, yeah,
that was that.
Oh yeah, the same thing he fought with.
Yeah.
So, all cool stuff.
And then there was also, which could be a reference, I'm not sure if it is or not. There was when, and yes, kind of slightly spoiler, but when they were in the sanctum fighting, and Strange went for the axe. Tribe was trying to go for the axe, but the cloak wouldn't let him. Yeah. I'm like, okay, there you go. This is something close back to the, could be a possible callback to the recent books.
Yep. Since he's an axe wielder now.
Mm-hmm.
Along with his good buddy, Odinson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Who we saw at the end.
Another spoiler. Oh, spoiler! Spoiler!
I like that I went into it without any clue of what the post-credit scenes would be.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of figured it would have gone into Thor, though, because I think that's the next one coming up.
Yeah, but now we know he's going to be in Thor.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see that he was, spoiler alert, wearing the yellow gloves in that scene. I was like, oh, yeah, nice.
What do yellow gloves have to do anything?
Like, to complete the costume.
Oh, that Strange wears yellow gloves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magic. Tim and magic.
Yeah, I was like, eh. Which I will say, and people have brought this up before, but and it totally rings true. But if you have seen Doctor Strange and are interested in the comics, read The Oath, because there's part of that actually kind of gets referenced. Well, it's kind of sort of
referenced. How old is The Oath?
It's like 4 or 5 issues. It's a miniseries. It was like pretty great.
How long ago did it come out?
Oh, I don't
know. Like 90s?
No, it might be early 2000s. I have to look it up real quick.
Oh, okay, not so bad. I might read it then. Let me jot that down.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad story. I remember reading it not terribly long ago, actually.
Okay. So, that is our...
2007.
Clip. Oh, that's not bad. Yeah. Who's it? The creative team on that?
Brian K. Vaughan and Mark Ross Martin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, also... Well, not also. Because, yeah, there was the other reason I was reading it, because it had a... Night Notes was in it.
So that's our collective thoughts on Doctor Strange. And since we missed the November 2nd New Comic Book Day reviews, we're going to start with those, and then we'll jump into this week's books. What's a good book from last week that we want to start with? Then we'll try to keep it short, since we have 2 weeks to 2 weeks worth of books to get to combined.
2 weeks.
Let's see, I'm looking at my list here from last week. Unworthy Thor, number one. Speaking,
that was
of Thor.
Awesome.
Yes, it was.
That was awesome. You didn't read it yet?
No.
Oh man, I kind of don't want to spoil too much of this, because this was really a good, you know, a good kickoff and a good kind of return to the storyline of this character who we have not seen for quite a while.
Mm. You know. So yeah, we got caught up with the Odinson. What happened to him in Original Sin? Sort of, we get like a flashback. It starts in current day, and then we flash back to before he got in his current predicament, and he gets a guest appearance by a friend by the end of the issue.
Right. Well, there's a couple of guest appearances that pop up in this issue. One is actually, I think it may be one of the few times we've seen the Unseen. Is it the Unseen?
Yes.
Right.
I totally forgot who that character even existed,
right? Because we hadn't seen him, no pun intended, you know, for a long time
after the Original Sin crossover.
Exactly. He may have popped up, you know, like a couple of times. Yeah. but it, this seems like his most extensive, the most we've seen of him in a while.
Silver Surfer from the last issue.
Oh, I didn't read that one yet.
Issue before last one, yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Did not know he was in Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
So in the letters page of this, Jason Aaron mentioned that this marked his 50th issue of Thor if you combine all series and volumes together, which encompasses Thor, God of Thunder, mm-hmm. Thor, Thors, and Mighty Thor.
Mm-hmm. The original Mighty Thor as well, right. Cool. So without spoiling too much of this, oh, and of course there is the hip-hop cover for this book that Rod is putting up. I was going to reach for my physical copy. But as was mentioned earlier, a big ally of Thor has returned by the end of this issue, and offers something very valuable to Thor, and it's a pretty touching moment, especially if you go back, if you harken back to this character's very first appearances and the bond that they develop over these very special items. I'm really not hiding what we're talking about very well.
I was going to make a joke about who you were talking about, but then I think it's probably who I'm thinking it is. So
yeah, so right. So, but that's all right. It's all right. So yeah, I've got my physical copy here of the hip hop cover for the Odinson. And yeah, so like I said, without spoiling too much, it's very important, I think, Roddy, for you to catch up on this. It's important for anyone who's been reading the Jason Aaron run on Thor. Listen, you're already part of the choir that we're preaching to if you've been reading all of Jason Aaron's work on Thor.
I actually haven't.
Oh, you haven't been reading it at all? Mm-mm. Or you read like the earlier stuff? No?
I may have read like an issue or two here and there, but I have not read pretty much any of Thor.
Wow, I'm surprised.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm surprised is that, you know, that myself, you know, Tim's been reading it, right? We've been reading the Aaron Thor for a while.
Yeah, I had been meaning to catch up with it, you know, just kind of see what's going on, but because I was reading it in the beginning when, you know, the whole Jane Foster thing happened. And then I don't know what happened. There's other books.
Yeah, you fall off. That's perfectly understandable.
All right.
So what is next? How about Champions number 2?
Yeah, how about Champions number 2?
Tim?
The quality book.
Tim, mm-hmm. I thought of Tim when I was reading this because he's always such an unabashed fan of, you know, like the teen books. And I think back to, you know, one of the standard bearers of the teen book, the new Teen Titans. And I love how this has like a great spirit to it. There is like a great like underlying spirit that's in the writing in this book. And it shows, and I'm reminded of how much I enjoyed reading the New Teen Titans when I was growing up. And I feel like it's been rekindled here in this book. It's such a great, it's got a great sense. You know, I've got a great sense for it, sense of it.
And there's already so much great chemistry between the characters in the book.
Right, because
they're already bouncing off each other, and relationships are being built.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, half of them like kind of work well. I mean, obviously, half of them work together because of Ms. Marvel, Nova, and Miles Morales, Spidey. So that was already kind of pretty much there, which kind of made this issue slightly weird.
How so?
Because, which I kind of get why they did it. Because in the course of the book, they're on this team building / camping trip, I guess you could say. And Kamala, who looks like she may end up being the leader of the team, or she's already kind of building it up to be the leader of the team the way she's talking, which I'm cool with. She starts talking about the first thing that she does, like, hey, everybody tell what their powers are, so you know we can get a sense of the cool combos that we could do together and I'm sitting here thinking, like, okay, she should already know most of this because one, she's a pretty big superhero fan person, and she's worked with half of the people.
But at the same, I would say you're right. But at the same time, she probably wants to know about, you know, at least some of the younger heroes that she's just now starting to get familiar with. And obviously, Miles doesn't have all the same abilities and skills that Peter Parker has
with him in the Avengers.
Right. That part I know, but in terms of how he would interact with Amadeus and with Viv is something else. So that's why I felt like it was kind of like, let's all get to know each other was a very kind of a common sense thing to do for, you know, at least from her perspective.
Right. And I get that. And also for anybody who new to the book and new to these characters, probably may or may not get a sense of, you know, what they have also.
Right.
So I get that part. So it wasn't, and so like I said, she would know.
Right.
At least she might not know much about Amadeus, but she knows Hulk. Mm-hmm. She knows Vision. She has worked with a version of, you know, at least one of them. So she kind of know, even if, or even read about it, because like I said, she's a big fangirl. So.
Right. Yeah, thought about fan fiction about them.
And there's that too. You know what? And I thought about that too. It's like, well, you know what?
Absolutely. But you know, yeah, I was going to say, so ultimately what this was a kind of like a team building exercise. Yeah. Right. And as was alluded to earlier, there's also relationships being built. Spoiler yes. alert. So... read this book. This is a lot of fun for, you know, like oftentimes after a big number one, the number two issue kind of falls off for a lot of people. That is not the case here. This is one of, I think, the headliner books to come out of this wave of Marvel now.
Hmm. Yeah, that last page, man.
Yep.
Yeah. I like that they don't even, you know, fight a thread in this issue. It's all just interpersonal Well, team building, as you
could. They thought that it could have been a potential threat. It was, except for it was a new member,
right.
Which actually, that part was kind of cool because I mean, I am not the biggest fan. Well, so spoiler alert: Cyclops kind of enters the fray.
But he's on the cover, so it's not that big a spoiler.
I know, and then he said he's going to be in the book. But the way he kind of comes in is like, yeah, he's just kind of watching from the shadows at first, and then although he, which I guess makes sense because apparently when you see him in the shadows, and then when we see him pop back up again. You know, one of the members wasn't there. So when that person comes back in and he mistakes them for a threat and he just kind of takes action, that was kind of funny. And then the part after that where Amadeus just kind of gets up in his face and kind of, you know, not necessarily bullies him, but he was like, yeah, you know, what are you going to do against me? And then he just zaps him again.
Right. Like the one. Nitpicky point I would have is if they're on a camping trip, what the hell is Cyclops doing out there out in the middle of nowhere?
Exactly.
But you know what? I let that one go. I let that one go. What is he using? Cerebro?
Where did he come from? And where are they? Or, you know.
Yeah.
I like that Amadeus is trying to be the jock and show off.
Well,
he's jumping real high.
Yeah.
Right, which is funny because he's technically like the brain on the team too. So,
right,
yeah, one of them.
Yeah. Oh yeah, him and Viv.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which and even Miles, you know, too. Yeah, I was about to say Miles, not slouches either, but right.
All right.
Cool. But yeah, no, absolutely, Tim. I hope that you enjoy this book because this is right up your alley, and it's I'm enjoying this a lot.
Yeah, same here. To go back to Amadeus for a second, I'm like, he does mention the fact that he's the eighth smartest person on Earth, and I'm like, is that actually true still anymore?
He's moved up.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like seemed like that has shifted since that has been prevalent. I don't know.
Since the end of Secret Wars. Yeah. Yep. You know, and I don't know if they've completely established that Lunella's moved up to the top and how that has shifted the rest of the list, you know?
Right.
So, but all right. Let's see. What else we got here from last week? How about, all right, so you've covered two of my books already. How about a big number one that came out last week, Avengers number one?
This was fun as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the hip-hop cover for the book last week. Anyone watching on video can see that. I was able to pick up the physical copy of this. So, to me, it's really cool to see Mike Del Mundo's interior art again because it's so different. It's very cinematic, obviously, because it's a much more painted style than some of the work that you're used to seeing. I enjoyed this because. It's nice to see this particular group, you know, kind of just together already, you know, this iteration of this version of the Avengers, this particular lineup is pretty, you know, it's classic, but with a new twist, as always. Because, and while I'm not spoiling anything, because they're on the covers, the Wasp is actually the Nadia Pym Wasp. Thor is Jane Foster, Chick Thor. It's Falcap, Captain America. Vision, who is you know, still dealing with the after effects of the Tom King miniseries. Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and Hercules. So it's a classic, but still a classic Avengers lineup with a twist. And you know, to see them kind of reestablish where the kind of senior squad of the Avengers is kind of cool. I like this issue.
I like kind that
all new, the all new, slightly different Avengers.
Yeah,
I like seeing Mike Del Mundo's art on a high profile book.
Yes.
You know, you think of an Avengers book, and you might not automatically picture his art inside of it, but I'm glad to see it.
Right.
Because I'm a fan.
No, absolutely. Same here. And isn't it nice to see that they picked up on that thread that I'm going to hit the spoiler bell here. On some of the threads from the other books where they've picked up this that they're the first battle is with Kang and different versions of Kang.
And which is what I wanted to bring up. I'm like, so far Kang has been the beginning arc of the last few different Avengers books, correct?
Not so much.
He was in the Inhumans.
He was, yeah, Uncanny Inhumans. He was right. The opening villain for that.
Uncanny Avengers, the All New, All Different.
He wasn't beginning for All New, All Different Avengers, was he? It was that dude from the Nova book.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Okay.
Yes.
And then
yes.
He was in Remender's Uncanny Avengers. He built some big...
Right, and that's where this comes... That's where a lot of this stuff is continuing from.
It seems like, I'm sure I'm probably forgetting some stuff, but it seems like none of it like references the previous, like his appearances in Uncanny Humans was the most recent, and then he just shows up here, and then those previous, whatever, issues of All New, All Different Avengers, he just kind of shows up and is like, yep, I'm a threat again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's confusing...
Which kind of made me think that they were trying to set him up for another Kang War or something.
I think that's where this is going. But
yeah, this opening arc is Kang War 1 or something like that, right?
Two? Is that what it is? Hold on, let me take a look.
Probably but, 2, because there has been a Kang War before. Right.
I was going to say that it's, you know, I think the constant they don't want to call them reboots because they're, you know, they're just kind of soft reboots where they restart new volumes, right? All the constant restarting and reshuffling of the books, you know, doesn't let us figure out how this is all connected together and how we're supposed to see all those recent Kang appearances and how they piece together. So I definitely understand, you know, I definitely understand why that's, you know, that's been so hard for us to figure out. And also I wanted to point out on the last page, they have the next to last page actually, because there is in the physical comic a preview of the next cover by Alex Ross. But the page before that is a look into the future coming this year in Avengers. And that's actually a pretty interesting feature that they put into this.
Right.
So from comicbook.com, they have it labeled as Kang War 1.
Okay.
Well, I guess technically because the first Kang War was called Kang Dynasty, but it was also the kind of...
Because everyone has to use war in your conflict names.
That's yeah, funny.
But it kind of had a side title of Kang War, so...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right, what else we got from this week? Or well, last week.
Let's start with another number one, then. Occupy Avengers Temple 1.
You know, I didn't make it through this.
It was better than I thought it was going to be.
I mean, I started. I just never, you know, like, I put it back down. I haven't picked it up again, so...
I liked, Carlos Pacheco's art. I'm a fan of his.
Oh, he's a super consistent.
So Gabriel Walta was supposed to be the opening artist for this book, but he had to finish up the Vision. So Pacheco is going to start, and then Walta will take over in, I think, like issue 4 or 5 or something like that.
Yeah, you don't lose anything with that, man.
Yeah. So this is following Hawkeye as he's been acquitted of murdering the Hulk, and he's kind of going across the country helping the little person.
Not guilty. Y'all got to feel me.
Yeah.
And he runs into Deputy Red Wolf. And, huh?
Oh, no, you kind of cut out there for a second.
Oh, yeah, Deputy Red Wolf, they stop some people that are polluting. Well, they don't stop them. They fight some people polluting in water and an Indian reservation. And then the final page introduces a water-based villain.
What is that? What is that? Real life coming into into play in comics?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. And it's probably a water-based villain that is of a second, third tier, I guess.
Oh, just definitely generous.
Yeah.
Which, so the thing about this one was, okay, Hawkeye has met a version of Red Wolf before, because I was thinking about this. So this is the Red Wolf that was transplanted from 1870 to Secret Wars 1872 book.
Yes.
This
is where we need Dirk, because he actually read that book.
I read 1872, I read it.
No, I mean, well, yeah, I guess that and the Red Wolf.
That was what I'd say.
I read part of it, but I didn't read the whole thing.
Yep.
But the weird thing about it is, like, Hawkeye knows Red Wolf, or at least a Red Wolf, because they met, like, way back when Red Wolf was introduced. Now, granted, like I said, it was probably a different version, because it was, like, the quote-unquote modern version then, because Red Wolf came into the universe in an Avengers book. So it seemed like to me, Hawkeye would have been like, hey.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think we can let that one go.
Continuity.
I mean, yeah, and I'm kind of chalking it up as like sequels, but it just didn't sit right with me. I was like, well, wait a minute. And then I thought about Red Wolf might have been when with them when the West Coast Avengers went back to the past, but apparently it wasn't. So it was like that part right there was
you win the no. Roddy Cat wins the no prize.
Yeah, like that was just like that part. Just was like, wait, why don't you know one of you know each other? That didn't make any sense. But so anyway. Right. Outside of that, yeah, it was a pretty good read. I'm curious as what this book is going to continue to be about. We do see Hawkeye, kind of refining his purpose, I guess you could say.
Well, I've read an interview or two with Walker, and I'm excited to see future team members come and go through the series.
Mm-hmm.
One character he is familiar with is going to show up in future issues.
Shaft?
Maybe.
Damn right.
Oh, man.
I'm going to jump to Superman number 10.
Nice. All right.
The Super Sons meet for the first time, and it was hilarious and awesome. So, of course, it was a week ago now. I'm trying to remember exactly how. I want to say, that's right. There was a Jonathan Kent, Superman's son, is at school with his best friend. I think her name's Kathy. And he runs into this girl. And it's like, I'm looking at the girl, and I'm like, she looks familiar. Which is, the reason she looks familiar is because the artist, Patrick Gleason, drew this same character when he was writing and drawing Robinson of Batman. I forget her name. I think they call this her name. She started out as Damian's enemy and then they became friends and whatnot. So Damian sent her to the school to sort of like eavesdrop and spy on Superboy. And eventually he kidnaps Superboy and ties him up in the Batcave, I believe. Of course, Superboy breaks out. They like get to arguing. I think, Batman shows up and is like, Damian? Mm. Untie that kid now, yada yada yada. Superman comes crashing in and he's all pissed off, like, what are you doing with my son? And like him and Batman are like arguing, because remember, this isn't the same Superman and Batman from the New 52, same Batman but different Superman, so they're trying to still trying to get used to one another. Then Robin and Superboy start fighting each other. There's this one splash page of like Superboy punching Damian in the gut. It's like hilarious.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and then like I said, they start fighting, and then I want to say Superboy tries to use his heat vision or something on Superboy, but then like Batman and Superman like end up like Batman throws a batarang that deflects something from the blast from Superboy, and Superman does blots a blast or like a batarang from Robin, and it's like the last final splash page is like the two of them standing over their kids, and like they're all like in silhouette, and all you see is just like the outline of their bodies. Like, we're gonna strain these two out, but it's a very hilarious issue of just watching the two sons interact and start off as bitter rivals. It probably, and this probably would have been my click of the week last week in a tightly contested week.
What, you mean it's not Sheriff of Babylon? Oh, wait, that's Dirt.
Yeah. Which did end this week, or last week.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I bring it up. So I'm waiting for Dirt.
Teased, and they've teased the season two.
Nice. Dirt, where are you?
And let's see, I'm going to quickly jump to Batman number 10, part two of I Am Suicide. I don't know what the fuck this issue was about.
Nice!
It's like Batman repeating the same, like, four or five sentences over and over again as he, like, breaks into Santa Prisca and, like, Bane, like, beats the crap out of him. And there's, like, this scene where it looks like he breaks Batman over his back again. And then Batman's dumped in a cell that's filled with water that comes into the cell. It's the same cell that Bane lived, grew up in, and he had to hold his breath when the water filled the cell and yada, yada, yada. And Batman has to do the same. And then there's this weird image of, like, Superman contorting his body, I guess, to, like, straighten his back out or something. It's weird. And it was, like, all this just so, like, Catwoman can help infiltrate with him or something. I don't know. It was just odd. It looked great because of Mikael Janin's art, but I needed something else from it.
Okay. All right. I mean, I haven't read the issue yet, but I've read on a couple of comic book review websites that this is probably the first, I guess, misstep. But I would argue that Batman fighting Kaiju was the first misstep, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, and I was looking forward to that, but thankfully it went by quick.
Yeah.
King's Batman, he has a tendency to write his Batman where he, like, repeats the same things over and over again to show, like, how badass he is.
Okay.
And it was just weird, this issue. It's like, Bane, I'm going to stop you. I'll be the one to break you. And it's like, he just says it over and over again. That's all he says in the book. He doesn't speak much, but when he speaks, that's all he says. And it's like, the last thing he says is, like, he's helping the ventriloquist and Catwoman sneak into Santa Prisca.
All right. So how many more books do you guys have? You want to do, like, rapid fire for last week?
I got, like, one. I got two, but I got, like, definitely one more.
I've got one more as well. So.
All right. So, yeah, I only have one more. I just wanted to put up the cover for Hawkeye.
Oh, yeah.
Occupy Avengers actually says Hawkeye and Red Wolf on the hip-hop cover.
The Capone Noriega cover.
It's one of the few covers I recognized.
I know, right?
So what's the one book you had, Roddy?
Spider-Woman number 13.
Oh, that was mine too.
Okay, great.
Cool.
Man, that was kind of, this is messed up.
Yeah, there was a very tough twist to read in this book because, you know,
kind of see coming.
Yeah, the way it starts though is, you know, just kind of like day in the life. But then when you start to, you know, dig a little deeper into the book and you deal with what the Porcupine is having to deal with now that he is reformed and some of the blowback that he gets as a result of that, and not just from his former villainous colleagues, but also from his ex-wife.
Right. Although he put himself in that situation that led to what ends up happening to him, and we don't get the sense of why just yet. I'm assuming that's going to happen.
Right.
Because if not, it's just a setup for Jessica to end up fighting, spoiler alert, Hobgoblin.
Spoiler alert. Hey, you got to give me a chance to ring the bell.
I mean, I know. Which granny's on the cover, so I mean, yeah. It's like.
So, but that's.
If that was the case, that's kind of bad. But yeah. At the same time, you know, I assume there's going to be some kind of resonance behind it.
Right. What I was going to say is what you have to remember is that the most recent iteration of Hobgoblin dealt with selling. Making deals to people to get them equipment and getting them supervillain identities, and I think that's going to play a role in this particular storyline.
Yeah. And so, Rip Roger. Sorry.
I was about to say let's not jump to conclusions just yet, but that is definitely what's implied.
Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Hey, listen, he's also on the cover of the next issue, so we don't know yet, right?
Well, yeah, but they've also done that for, like, Memorial issues.
No, this comic book cover is always accurate.
You know?
You get characters on there who don't even show up in the book.
Exactly.
So, Death of X number 3 was the only other one I was going to mention. introduces Magneto, and then some. They also introduced some mutant who I'd never heard of before, who I had to like research. I already forget his name. It's like Alchemy, his name. The only reason I remember that is because Dr. Alchemy is currently in the current season of The Flash. And supposedly, Cyclops is going to use him to stop the Terrigen Mist attacking mutants.
Which makes a lot of sense.
I guess if you actually know what that kid can do, but mm-hmm. I don't.
Well, he's you know, the goal was to transform the Terrigen Mist into something that's not toxic to mutants.
So what can that kid do, though? I don't know. Do you know who that Alchemy kid is?
Yeah, but that's the definition of alchemy, is to take one thing and turn it into another.
Oh, okay.
Basically, transmute one bit of matter to a different one, to a different set of matter. So,
you're underwater.
Oh, Rod is underwater.
Yay.
Well, Tim, do you have, what's your last book? That was Death of X?
Yeah, that was Death of X.
Oh, okay. All right. So you want to move on to this week, or you want to do Clicks of the Week for last week?
We can save them.
Okay, we'll save them.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess we can save them for then.
Okay.
I already said mine. But so this week, let's see, probably one of the bigger ones this week was the Invincible Iron Man number one, which I reviewed on theclicknation.com. So this was pretty nice. I liked getting the background of Riri's life growing up, sort of we jumped, you know, through the different like 5-year periods in her life. Hmm. Found out it's she has a stepdad and not a her stepdad.
Well, I was gonna say wait. Dang it, Ryan. Sorry.
Too slow, man, too slow. which actually that part kind of bothered me a little bit because it and maybe I'm being a little harsh on it, but it kind of reminded me of almost any urban 90s you know movie. Where it's like, all right, something happens, and then somebody gets taken out, or whatever gets maybe.
That wasn't the only person she lost, though. So,
yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, but it's kind of played
Ricky.
Out.
Ricky.
So what?
I said it's Ricky.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're with me on that. Exactly.
Oh no.
That was a different city, though.
Well, yeah.
Hey, look. It doesn't matter. You can go to almost any of those movies and something like that happen.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And that part kind of bothered me. But outside of that, you know, the rest of the story was like, you know, you it's basically cutting to her in, from the past and seeing that stuff, kind of stuff. Then you seeing her fighting this person in the present, you know, her mm-hmm. first, I guess, real battle.
Right.
With a mutant. Well, yeah, they said it was a mutant, apparently, who's fought the champions.
Right.
I think they just threw that in there.
Yeah.
But that is another creation of Brent Bendis's from his time on the X-Men.
Okay.
She appeared in Battle of the Atom number one.
Okay.
I just had to research that because I was like, I recognize her.
Nice.
Like, I didn't. And I didn't even bother to go back and check.
And it was smart to use a character that was still a new, newer
creation.
Person. Yeah, newer creation. So they were on almost the same level. It's more believable that she could beat Animax.
Mm-hmm.
How you say her name?
Animaniacs. Sorry. And so, just very quickly, in my estimation, it was a pretty good opening issue to this. It does make the character interesting, although. I feel like she's just a slightly older version of Lunella at this point. At least that's how it hit me a little bit.
Yeah. I don't know. I see it. But I don't know.
I like that how they incorporated how Tony Stark will still play a role.
Oh, yeah. The big spoiler. Spoiler alert.
It was kind of funny because you kind of saw it coming. Well, not kind of saw it coming, but you knew something was going to happen on that front. And it may have even been. You know, sporting solicitors or whatnot, and I know I've seen it outside before this, but as soon as I saw the packet she got and the big red button, which has happened before, because that's when you know, which Bendis wrote this also in the previous run when Mary Jane got a similar package, I'm like, well, you see where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
I like the inventor in her was like, I gotta push it.
You know, right?
Yeah, see what it is.
You can't fight it. You can't fight it. That is the no pun intended, the button that Tony Stark put for her, right?
Right, right.
But I do have a question, though. Isn't the same thing happening in Infamous Iron Man? Did y'all read that? We don't know yet, though.
Oh, that came out already, right? I hadn't read that yet.
It was like 2 weeks ago.
I haven't read it yet. Oh, man. Okay.
Well, never mind. I feel like the same thing is going to happen in that book, too, though. Actually, yeah. Well, yeah.
Didn't you write it?
Huh?
Didn't Bendis write that one also?
Yeah. I mean, he's using the same ploy or same...
Mechanism or something? Storytelling tool. Okay.
Yeah, of keeping Tony in both books the same way.
Which, put them together and then you get... No.
Yeah, they probably will do that at some point. But I don't know. Like I said, that was the part I kind of didn't like as much, because it was like I said, as much as I would like her to be her own character, and I get that there has to be the tie to Tony in some sort of way, and there already will be, but like she couldn't get her own AI? Like she couldn't make him...
Well, you know what would help if we actually knew how Civil War 2 ends?
Yes!
That would also help. Yes.
We haven't gotten to that.
I know. And which was the other thing. I was like, okay, we still don't know what exactly happens with that.
I don't know. I was going to say, though, just very quickly, just to address Roddy's point to a certain extent. Come on, man. She's still a kid.
She still has to have her own identity, though. That doesn't,
right. You know. But the thing is, this allows them to create the mentor-mentee relationship to get her on her footing. You know?
I get that. Yeah. But there could have been another way to handle that.
Oh, you mean having him be alive?
No, having him be alive. There's other ways to know. There should have been other ways to do that.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I'm just like, come on, hello, Civil War 2. Coming in hot.
Well, lukewarm, yeah, right? Tepid at this point.
What else from this week?
World of Wakanda number one.
Wait, right. hold on. Tim didn't react. I wasn't sure if he read it.
I haven't.
Oh, no, Roddy. I couldn't get to it.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
I read your notes down here on a nice spreadsheet.
Yeah. So apparently, see, here's the cover here. I didn't get the hip hop cover. I didn't get the other because there was a couple of the covers I actually wanted, but apparently things have gone wrong with my shop.
I got it. Here we go.
The ordering at my shop has been slacking for a while.
Gotcha. There it is, right here. Film.
Yep. So there's that. But this takes place around AVX, actually, speaking of.
It goes back that far?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Mm-hmm. Has to do with, and we kind of knew this already. It has to do with Anika and Ayoya when they met, which was during Dora Milaje initiate training, where, you know, Anika was the captain and Ayoya was an initiate and being rather brash and, you know, and whatnot. But we see kind of various steps of how their relationship will progress, because we've already seen them, you know, in Black Panther already, so we know where they are now. This is just kind of going to the past and kind of stepping through their relationship, which I thought was kind of cool. But it also, like I said, takes place during AVX, and we see things about that when we actually see when Namor flooded Wakanda at the end of the book. Spoiler alert, sorry. But most of the front story kind of deals with their relationship and the training and kind of getting to a point. The backup story is talking about Zenzi, who is the young lady from the beginning arc of Black Panther, who, you know, was an antagonist or still was and possibly is still an antagonist. We get a little bit of backstory on her and how she's come up. They do kind of put it in a time frame. It might have been around this. I can't remember if it's around this. Yeah, I think it does take place around that exact same time, because they do mention about her country, which is the country like near Wakanda. So she's from the country that's not doing so well, because Wakanda has, you know, pretty much everything there and took some stuff from that company. So now they're kind of struggling. And when Namor attacked, they're trying to rebuild, and you get some of the same talk that you see in Black Panther about, you know, doing things for ourselves and, you know, not taking back Wakanda, but, you know, not needing Wakanda's help because they seem to not really care about them. And you see a little bit of class divide in there. So that was that. And then at the end of that story, you see where she meets Tetu, which is the other antagonist of the Black Panther. So it's all tying together into the main Black Panther book. And you can kind of see, you know, the consultation that Ta-Nehisi Coates has done, but they're both, I thought this, both of the stories were pretty decently written. I like I said, I really enjoyed how the main story was written, and the backstory was actually pretty good too. So like I said, I enjoyed it. I'm debating about whether it's going to be Clicker of the Week or not, but it was
just was that good? Okay.
I thought so.
Cool.
All right. Clone Conspiracy number 2.
I've read some negative reviews on this even before I opened it. I actually enjoyed it. What did you think, Tim?
I liked it too. I liked how I've called the Jackal, like they've turned him into almost like a Mr. Sinister.
Yes.
Like they redesigned Mr. Sinister and gave him like a suit and tie and all that stuff. And now Jackal's got his like Anubis mask and business suit.
Just as an aside, I wanted to mention
that. Wait, so is that who that is in Moon Knight?
No. But just as an aside, I wanted to mention very quickly before, just hold on to your thoughts on Clone Conspiracy number 2. They put out photos of Marvel Legends line for the next Spider-Man line around New York Comic Con. And one of the characters that's featured in that is the old school Miles Warren Jackal. And one of the lines in this book I thought was hysterical. It's this version of the Jackal talking about how he's had a bit of a makeover. And he's talking about how the old Jackal looked like... he's saying that what he looks like now is a tad melodramatic, but it gets more respect than Fuzzy Yoda in a Speedo. And I think it's funny that that's the Fuzzy Yoda in a Speedo version is the one that's coming out in the Marvel Legends line. And just keep this in mind, that Marvel Legends line is the one that's going to have the first Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel figure in it, so that's going to be a hot commodity. Now back to our review of Clone Conspiracy number 2.
So Jackal sort of lays out his plan of why he's done what he's done and brought all these characters back, and there's a lot more characters we see revived,
mm-hmm.
and just the like the Jackal, and well, not Jackal, but the Rhinos and Electros and Dr. Octopus. And we, of course, we see Gwen Stacy, but the Gwen Stacy...
Hold on. This is awesome. This was awesome.
This was a swerve.
This was a swerve that was based in Spider-Verse, and that's what was so awesome.
So another character returns here. It's kind of hard to like talk around it without saying who this person is.
Go for it.
And that would be Kane, the Scarlet Spider. But they talk about him here like they make it seem like he's been appearing all along, or should have been appearing. Because he talks about how he's been working with them. It's like, well, why wasn't he in Web Warriors, right?
Yeah, but he was in Spider-Verse, so they're going back even further.
Yeah, but he's working with Gwen Stacy, who's a Web Warrior.
Right, but I guess.
So that kind of got me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad he's back, so there's that.
It's a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun because I'm reading this now and just flashing back to how much fun I had actually reading the Spider-Verse event and Web Warriors. So, you know, it's kind of cool. Again, though, it's kind of weird to see this, and I'm wondering what the end game is. I've mentioned this before. I've speculated on previous shows that this seems a lot like Slott is resetting the Spidey corner of the verse and the Marvel Universe and putting all the toys back in the sandbox.
Yeah. He's been building to this for years. I wonder if like this is getting close to his swan song.
Yeah. Yeah. Which you have to think it might be that case.
I'm already calling it Robbie Thompson will be taking his place.
All right.
They seem to like him over there in the Spidey corner,
mm-hmm.
Spidey offices. But
I understand that. I get that.
But yeah, lots of cool reveals in this issue.
Yeah, like I said, I had a lot of fun reading this. Like I was kind of like, yeah, whoa, you know, like kind of audibly doing that. So it was pretty fun for me.
Do you want to hop over to the other? Well, there was a couple of Spidey books this week, but another number one.
Oh, pulling out the hip hop cover now. I had that here. It's Amazing Spider-Man: Renew Your Vows. I can honestly say I like this, but did not have as much fun reading this as I did reading Clone Conspiracy. What did you think of it, Tim?
It was fun. I like Jerry Conway, how he wrote the Parker family.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of joking, the joke about Spider-Man trying to remember, mentally remember the shopping list.
Yes. I liked that part. I wasn't so sure I liked how we got to the cliffhanger ending. I thought that was very
that
much
just came out of light, came out of nowhere.
Right. That's why I didn't have as much fun reading this book to get to that point.
I think this was some of the best art I've seen from Ryan Stegman.
It's clean.
It was very clean.
Who's the inker on this?
Yeah, I was like, I wanted to research and go back and look and see, has it been the same colorist and inker he's been using? I want to say in the past he's inked his own work.
I don't know. It says artist for Ryan Stegman, and then it says Sonia Obach, who is one of the super. Yeah, she's a super professional colorist. Like, she's done so much color work on stuff that you would recognize. I'm wondering if maybe she doesn't really embellish a lot of his work with the colors, as opposed to maybe she's direct coloring pencils.
And Dell, I think it's Don Dell, was the inker. You got the issue.
No, he's not here. No, well, Brawl in the Family, Part One. Jerry Conway, writer. Ryan Stegman, artist. Sonia Obach, colorist, and VC's Joe Caramagna as the letterer.
I could swear I looked at that.
Yeah, I'm looking right at the
either way. Now.
But you know, like you said, you know, it's clean. I honestly think that it's probably a credit to Sonia Obach. Remember, she did a lot of coloring on Mike Choi's run on X-Force back in the day, and she's steadily gotten a lot of high profile work since.
Okay, so maybe it is just a different colorist. I need to go back and see who he's had. Color his work in the past.
Right.
All right.
Oh, and here's the hip-hop cover for
me. The rest of the family can't be on the cover?
No, because it's an homage to... It's a Nas cover.
They can't pick a family cover to
cover,
use.
Yeah. That's funny. All right. What else we got this week?
I mean, I can keep going.
Sure. By all means.
I'll jump around to... WWE Then, Now, and Forever from Boom Studios.
All right. Where's Dirt?
This is fun. I haven't finished the backup story with the New Day, which has art from Rob Guillory from Chew.
Okay.
But Dennis Hopeless is the writer of the Shield main story. It sort of talks, it's the story of how the Shield took sort of like the sort of backstage dealings and the lead up to the breakup of the Shield a couple years ago. Very fun. He had the voice of the wrestlers down. He had like the voice of Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, the Wyatt family, Triple H. Everyone was making appearances. It was fun.
Nice.
Very fun book. So this was like the pre.
Oh no!
Hey!
What? Oh, sorry. Somebody said wrestling, and I just.
This is like the lead up to the main series that starts in July.
Cool.
January.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, man. That's cool. I hope this has more legs than some of the more recent WWE comics.
It's in conjunction or whatever the term is. It's in, they're working with the WWE.
Sure.
If that helps any.
I hope so. All right. Did anyone read Cap Steve Rogers number 7?
Not yet.
No.
Okay, I will not spoil too much. It's a shame. It's tough to read this when, you know, we would all look to Cap for inspiration in the times that we're living in today. But this is, again, a lot of cool development of the Hydra Cap story. It is the first issue in the new story arc that's called Hail Hydra. And, you know, we're definitely deep into some more of Kobik's manipulation of Steve Rogers' past. And there is a particular character that is introduced here as part of Kobik's manipulation that is now intertwined into Cap's origin. And it's a surprising character, but one of the things that pops up in this issue, spoiler alert, that lets you know who it is, and it kind of ruins the suspense. What they introduce in this issue is the country of Sokovia. And if you watched Captain America: Civil War this past summer, you know that Sokovia plays a role in that, after playing a big role in Age of Ultron. And what we have coming out of that is a certain Helmut, and Helmut makes a return in this issue. and I'm not going to say any more than that. That's enough of a spoiler. But at the end of the day, Cap's mission to try to take over Hydra and eventually knock off the Red Skull is moving forward inexorably, slowly but inexorably.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a big. This is all set up right now. Spencer is writing a story that is all set up right now. We're we're still, I think, a ways away from payoff.
I just realized I didn't load that on my iPad, so I'm doing that now. Somehow I missed it. Okay. Let's see.
More movie ties.
You got ready?
Well, I guess speaking of cinematic ties, in a way, Power Man and Iron Fist number 10.
I had to quickly read number 9 before we start the show, and I got like 4 pages into this one, so.
Right.
Continue.
So, after the events of last issue, we have a new arc started. We know there's a new villain that's coming into the fold. But at the start of this one, we got, Luke and Danny got a plan of where they're going to, what they're going to do next. You see some backstory about some villains that we have seen during the course of this book, which plays out later in the book. One of the villains that, but we see Luke and Danny kind of checking up on the people that they helped free, from prison, and they still got a mission to kind of exonerate the ones that are being wrongly accused and targeted by this program that they found that's been stolen by the villain, the villain of the upcoming arc, of this arc. It seemed like, because it was kind of funny, because like the people we see building, like kind of trying to rebuild Harlem and whatnot, it seemed like they were like Harlem's own damage control, which if that's the case, that's great, but then we see them going to a meeting with a bunch of heroes to tell all the heroes, like, look, this is what we're going to do. We got this mission. We're telling y'all in advance. We're basically telling y'all, so,
stay out of our way.
We're
going to
do this. Well, yeah, yes and no. It was like, look, we're going to do this regardless of what y'all think about it or not. So, but we're just telling y'all to be nice kind of situation. We get a little bit more on a couple of the villains. And at the end of the issue, said main supervillain, who is a former runaway.
And kind of the mastermind behind the first arc.
Exactly. Comes in at the end of this book as a propositioning a couple of people. And there's also another kind of little subplot between Black Cat and Cottonmouth, who just escaped from prison. I guess he broke out during, it seemed like it was alluded to, he had broken out during
the last issue.
Mm-hmm. And getting approached by, one of his boys, and Black Cat with a proposition to try to take over Harlem. So we're going to see all those kind of come together in the arc. It was pretty cool. We'll see how this one. This is supposedly going to change some things going forward. And I guess make Alex Wilder a bigger figure.
Maybe we'll start popping up in other series going forward.
Sure, maybe.
Is it interesting to see how in the vacuum left behind by some of the big brains that they've taken off the table, that they've elevated some of these other characters who were, kind of mastermindy type and super genius types to the forefront. And that's what, and these are the characters that, they didn't have to dig that far into the character bin to find them. Although they really haven't been on the board for, a lot of them for extended periods or have been kind of in mothballs for a while.
Yeah, Prodigy's still out there somewhere.
Right.
Yep.
So, what was that, Young Avengers we last saw him?
Yeah.
So, he's still out there.
Yeah, between that and, I guess, Original Sin, I don't know which one was. It was around that same time. Sin regardless. Came,
yeah.
Well, if you think. Original Sin. What I was going to say is, if you think about it, even Amadeus was on Mothballs for a while, so.
Mm-hmm.
Just takes the right pitch.
Exactly. All right. What else do we have here for this week? Can I mention?
Everything I have is quickies. So,
no, we just talked about Power Man, Iron Fist. Daredevil number 13. Just very quickly, it is a continuation of this Dark Art saga. This issue is mildly formulaic. It involves Blindspot and him chasing the antagonist in the issue, and we're left with a pretty exciting but kind of predictable cliffhanger ending.
All right. Let's see. Detective Comics number 944 starts the victim syndicate. So, of course, Red Robin has passed away, but not really. The Bat team, Team Batman needs a new IT person. So, who do they call but Luke Fox, a.k.a. Batwing. And in the process of recruiting him, this victim syndicate attacks the police gala. And it's a nice twist on this group because they're all characters. I'm assuming they existed prior to the New 52 and whatnot, but they're all characters that had their lives affected by Batman in some way. Like, there's one person that was under the influence or controlled by Poison Ivy. Another one was a lady that worked backstage on the last movie that Clayface worked on. I'm trying to remember the other ones. It's all like, they're all bystanders that got in the way. So now mm-hmm. they blame Batman for everything that's wrong with them. I like Luke Fox. I like him being brought into the team. He's like, he goes to the Belfry and his job is to understand the computer system that Red Robin created because it's supposedly more advanced than the Batcave. He's like, the team needs to have branding. You know, is there a team name? And they're like, we have more important things to do than worry about branding or team names. Mm. So just little, quick little jokes and little humorous bits thrown in with the more serious tone of the series. But I'm interested to see. We learn who all the character, members of the Victim Syndicate are, except for the main, their leader. So it's going to be, how close is this person tied to Batman and the creation of Batman, perhaps?
All right.
And see, Uncanny Avengers number 16. I was going to say the Avengers book I'm enjoying the most, but now there's Avengers number, the new Avengers and Champions mm-hmm. books are out. But so this Unity Squad is still fighting the zombified Hulk possessed by the Hand in Japan. Hilarity with Deadpool. I like how Jerry Duggan writes Cable.
Hmm.
He's like, Cable can be like this, hard-nosed, grizzled guy, but like even he's like in reverence of Steve Rogers.
I did. I didn't finish this issue, but I did see that. That was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, he's like, it's Captain Freaking America. He's like, we've been disavowed by Captain Freaking America. He doesn't always agree with him, but he, respects
mm-hmm.
the man. And of course, after the Hail Hydra cap from your review earlier,
mm-hmm.
it's even more funnier to hear him speak so highly of Cap.
Right.
But there's one funny moment where he body slides to go help the team in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and he's with Sebastian Shaw and Toad, and he's like, you guys can come help if you want. And Shaw's like, I'm in the mood to punch some people too, and he convinces Toad to come help him. So like they walk through the portal that Cable opened, and it's like they peek their head in and they see like all these people scattered all over the place, all these Avengers like
it's attacking. It's a big splash page.
Yeah, big splash page of them attacking this like 20-foot tall Hulk monster. And they're like, yeah, that's okay. We're going to stay over here.
They're like, is that a Hulk?
Yeah, is that a Hulk?
Rain check heroics.
Yeah, rain
check. Oh, that's a good line.
That was funny. Yeah. And what really helps and completes the issue is the art from Pepe Larraz.
Yeah, it's really, no pun intended, Pepe. I'm flipping through this now. I just was not able to finish this before the show started on my way home. I didn't want to talk too much about it because I don't know how it ends. But, it's nice that, this book has kind of picked up again. And, it's just telling what seems to be a pretty fun story.
They work well as a team. They're like, Rogue is the field leader and she's like barking out orders. Her and Cable mm-hmm. work are a good leader and co-lead.
Right. It's the X-Men book we all want, right?
Yes. Damn it. All right.
That's funny. It's true. The Unity Squad is the X-Men book we all want. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I've got three more, but they can be rapid fires.
Go for it.
Red Hood and the Outlaws number 4. I'm probably one of the few people enjoying this book. It's just fun seeing this like dark trinity form. There's Red Hood, Artemis, who's a Amazon, and Bizarro, which is a Superman character. So Red Hood went undercover to infiltrate the Black Mass organization. Black Mask reveals that he knows who Red Hood is. He's Jason Todd, and he knows he's probably like trying to double cross him and whatnot. But Red Hood has helped him find a way to control the Bizarro monster, and hopefully Artemis will come up in the next issue to help him stop this mind controlled Bizarro from killing Red Hood and terrorizing Gotham. Mosaic number 2. Finished that before the show. This is fun. Again, seeing how his powers work, jumping from body to body. He's learning things about people as he jumps into their bodies, learning their skills they have, their memories. And I believe that Jerry Duggan made a guest appearance in the beginning part of the issue. I sent the writer, Jeffrey Thorne, a tweet asking if that was Jerry Duggan. It looks a lot like him. I guess maybe I need to ask Cary Randolph, the artist.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like him. And Mother Panic number 1 from DC's Young Animal imprint. It's a new vigilante in Gotham City. Like rich kid, celebutante who I guess is going to try to like take it back. What's the word I'm looking for? She's trying to get back at the rich kids, I guess, or the rich people in town.
Okay.
But she has like a dark history that we slowly kind of learn about. It was all right. I guess the DC Young Animal imprint, maybe I need to try more of their books. Like, I tried this. I tried Doom Patrol number 1. I'm just like, eh.
Hmm. Did you say celebutante?
He did.
I think that's what the word they use in, like, the solicit or something.
Okay. All right.
You know, like, a rich, like, a
Paris Hilton. Yeah, I get it, but yeah. I'm like, yeah, but all right.
I was just making sure I said it right.
I just wanted to make sure I heard that. I'm like, really? That's what? All right.
Yeah, sure. But this takes place in Gotham City, and Batman makes an appearance, and I think that's a couple of issues as well. When I say an appearance, I mean like 2 panels. And that's it for me.
Well, I guess I can do my 2 then, and stay on the Young Animal train with Doom Patrol number 3. This book is still weird. You got fucking Danny the Street, who is apparently has come up in the world, or as a world, I guess. We are starting to get some threads being closed together, except for the fact that there's still some like really strange stuff going on in the book, and that hasn't been fully explained yet. But like I said, things are starting to come together. You got a little backstory on the main character is Casey's origin story, and apparently she is one of Danny's creations, as it turns out. Which who knows he had that kind of power, but he does now. And I guess this person is supposed to be like space cabbie. I don't even know. Like, this book is weird. And then there's some other people that are showing up to be good and that are doing some stuff that looks like they're going to be coming together pretty soon. And hey, this book is weird. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Yeah. It's still interesting book. Actually, I thought myself, because actually there's a point in the book where the character Casey kind of learns about herself. And then she's like, I'm out. And I thought about it myself, because going into the book, I'm like, okay, this book is weird and interesting, but I might be out also with this book. So when I got to that point, I'm like, huh, the character was thinking exactly kind of how I was. But I don't know. I usually stick to books a little bit longer. So I may give this a little bit more shot. And it's not like it has been bad books. It's just been weird and not, it's starting to get somewhere, but I'm not sure if I want to stick around for wherever it gets to. But that said, my last book is Poe Dameron number 8. Apparently, as they found out, Poe found out there might be a mole in the Black Squadron.
Mole. Sorry.
Sorry. What's that from?
Three Migos.
Is it from
Austin Powers.
Yes, I was going to say okay. It's Mike Myers.
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, I knew. I remember hearing that. I couldn't think from where.
Yeah. but yeah, like I said, he finds out there's a mole in Black Squadron, and because of how close they are, all like he's just kind of messed up about it because he doesn't want to think of any of those people that he's been working with and known for so long to be any you know, to be less than the person people he thinks they are. But he kind of still has to try to figure it out. But at the same time, he gets this other mission thanks to C-3PO having to do with droids, which had me, before I read that part, had me thinking, was like, well, it might not necessarily be them. It could be the droids. And then 3PO has to come along saying, hey, you know, I got these, you know, other droids as it's kind of like informants in these other places because, you know, nobody really sees droids because we're just here and they're all over the place and nobody really, you know, thinks anything of us, which, like I said, kind of goes along into sort of thinking of what I was thinking, you know, before he said that. I'm like, well, there you go. And then C-3PO ends up going along with Poe on a mission to which he had to go to this one planet to try to find out about what happens to this other droid who was sending information or find out, you know, what's going on with him because his signal stopped. And Poe had to pick another pirate because they're going undercover. And it just so happens that there's this other person that works with Black Squadron who can pilot, but is not one of the main pilots. So instead of, you know, getting one of the pilots that he normally runs with because, you know, he's still trying to figure out who the mole is, he took this other one. So, and now they're on this planet who's got some bad stuff happening on it and, you know, starting their old undercover mission. And at the same time, we get a familiar villain, Agent Terex, a.k.a. Agent Sinestro, kind of after the events of last episode, trying to get his shit back together, but he's also was supposed to kind of report to the First Order, but he's not doing that because he's kind of got his own mission he's going to do. That leads him to the same planet that Poe is on now, and you see a little bit more backstory into Agent Terex's history, which has to do with the Battle of Jakku. You know, again, Poe Dameron takes place around the time right before the last Star Wars movie, Force Awakens. So that's why you get a little bit of that in there. So all in all, this is going to end up with them meeting again, you know, as it seems to be meant to do. But they're heading towards the same place, and who knows where that's going to happen at the end of it again. Because like I said, this will be the third time they've met each other in this book. So all right. And that's it for me.
All right. Did you have any Age of 70?
No, we've covered everything I read.
Clips of the week for November 2nd.
That's a tough one for me. I really liked Unworthy Thor and Champions.
I did too.
Oh,
I'm going Superman number 10 though.
Nice. I'm going to go with my gut reaction and go Champions number 2.
Okay.
Well, and I am going to go with Champions also because I didn't get to read Moon Knight, even though I have it on here. And I didn't read Unworthy Thor, but Champions was good.
All right. And as
shout out to Josie and the Pussycats, though, because I did read that, and I thought that was kind of interesting. But
there you go. And
I'm sure Dirt would have chose
Sheriff Babylon.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
So now clicks of the week for...
Well, did you say yours?
Superman number 10.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So now clicks of the week for November 9th. Probably gonna go Clone Conspiracy number 2.
Oh, look at this. That's mine too.
Look at us.
I think I'm going to go with World of Wakanda number 1.
Nice.
Boom. Yeah. And Dirt probably would have chose WWE then, now, and forever.
That's cool. All right, so let me get an ad read in before we move on to the next portion of the show. Let me tell you about Skull Candy. Skull Candy makes the best headphones, earbuds, and gaming headsets, all with lifetime warranties. Skull Candy produces many types of audio accessories, including headphones, sports earbuds, Xbox gaming headsets, PlayStation gaming headsets, DJ headphones, iPod headphones, and MP3 headphones. And now, for the listeners of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles, Skull Candy offers free standard shipping on your order. To help keep our podcast free, order from Skull Candy by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Skull Candy banner, and then shop for high-quality audio accessories with free standard shipping. Skullcandy Audio through CSPN.us. Do it today.
All right. Let's see. So, cinematic news from the last 2 weeks. Is it broken down by weeks or is this all together?
It's pretty much goes from last week to this week, yeah.
Okay. So, Banshees of Anna Milicevic cast as Catwoman's mom on Gotham.
They do favor each other. I was kind of upset. Well, not upset, but I was kind of bummed because I was like, maybe they'll get Michelle Pfeiffer for this because, you know, the girl who plays Selena now looks kind of like a young Michelle Pfeiffer, but this woman they have on here, they look like they kind of favor also. So it worked out.
Talia al Ghul is finally coming to Arrow.
As some people say, the al Ghul that you wanted, which I like Nyssa, so I can't say that. But
yeah.
It's interesting that they're doing this, though.
Maybe she'll come with her sister.
I mean, she should be still around. I don't know.
excuse me. See, 3 wonderful Wonder Woman posters were revealed. Mrs. Florida movie.
Hmm. Yeah, which trailer was also out. Yeah. Did anybody have that trailer in their movie?
No.
I heard it was supposed to be, but...
Yeah, I thought it was going to be too, but that's going to be kind of weird.
It was in mine.
I get it.
I might have missed it. I walked in. I think the trailers had already started.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, with reserved seating, you don't worry. You know, you're not trying to sweat getting there so early.
Oh, you fancy pants people.
Yeah, you're picking on me or teasing me about reserved
seating. Oh, yeah. I didn't know he did.
Yeah, who worries about trailers?
I'm up here with the damn Wumpa Centers up here.
Oh, no. Oh, mercy.
Let me get my pinky up.
Oh, no. Oh, boy.
But yeah, but it was a good trailer. I don't know if you guys have seen it. You know, it just shows there's a lot more action to it.
Yep. Yeah. Watched it online, of course.
Yeah.
I did watch it online before getting to the theaters. I'm still not sold on whether or not Gal Gadot or Gal Gadot is going to really be able to act her way through this movie.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we don't have much going outside of the action. But, I mean, I think she'll be fine.
I hope so.
One of Superman's best villains is finally heading to Supergirl with a connection to Supergirl.
Yeah.
Justice League cast Game of Thrones star Ciaran Hinds as the big bad Steppenwolf.
Okay.
Sure. Defenders confirms a whole bunch of cast members.
Yeah, right.
Everyone that's appeared on any of the previous single series.
Yeah, basically.
I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, we're just waiting for them to confirm Ghost Rider, and then, you know, that'll be that.
All they're missing is Punisher.
Yeah.
I think his is filming now, right?
Yeah.
Something, I guess Defenders hasn't started filming yet, though. So.
No, they have. Didn't we go over this? That the working title for it, exactly the working title for it is Group Therapy, and I've seen signs for Group Therapy on the streets of Manhattan. So okay. I think they are filming Punisher and the Defenders simultaneously.
So are you sure that's not for recent events and not because of?
Oh no, this is predating. And I did mention what the working title for the Punisher is, right? Crime. Mm-hmm. I kind of giggled when I read that one.
Kevin Feige wants Marvel to move past all white casts.
Yay!
That still hasn't happened yet, but that's fine.
Oh, you know, unfortunately, like it is with the comics, they'll get there eventually. Hopefully, we're all still alive.
X-Men comics writer Chris Claremont blames Hollywood for the title's decline.
You know, I put this in here and I didn't exactly read the whole thing. It just kind of when I started reading, I was like blah blah blah, but I don't know, there might be something to it.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is that he actually mentions it a little bit too in the talk that he did with Stan Lee and Walt Simonson with Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm. I know in the Bleeding Cool article I read, he's on a exclusive contract with Marvel, but Marvel doesn't give him any work. It's like one of those deals where they have him under exclusive contract just so he won't go write for anyone else, but they don't have anything for him to write. So he just like gets a check just to not write.
That's a nice life.
Where can I get that?
Yeah, it's a nice life.
When you're the go-to person for any X-Men stories of the previous generations.
Yeah, when your previous work has been deemed classic, and then you can ride off of that. So.
But I actually don't mind him not being used anymore. Because like some of his recent stuff, like every time they try to bring him back to the X-Men to write stuff,
I mean, Ghost Rider, that Nightcrawler book wasn't... Wait, was it Nightcrawler?
I'm not even counting that Nightcrawler book.
He's talking about, like, runs on the actual Uncanny title.
Right.
Yeah, like, wasn't he riding Extreme X-Men?
But that's what I'm saying. That Nightcrawler book technically kind of was an X-Men book because it wasn't always just him in there.
Right.
It wasn't just him solo. It almost didn't take any time.
Right, but what Tim is referring to is that there's a certain run that is not looked kindly upon where... Yep. Claremont tried to introduce groups and groups of new characters, and they just were not well developed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, who cares about X-Men?
I take offense to that, and so does Tim.
Of course. You're going to see once Resurrection begins. X-Men are back, baby.
We'll see how X versus I, whatever the hell they're calling that.
You know what's funny is I very quickly... Tim would appreciate this, although he's a little on the younger side to really appreciate the Marvel Legends Wolverine, the short itty bitty Wolverine with the tan costume that came out with the X-Men Legends, the Build-A-Figure for whatchamacallit, for Juggernaut. He's teeny tiny, and I actually saw him in a Walgreens of all places on sale, and I picked it up just so I could have an extra Wolverine. This is my second one of this version, and he's just sort of on my desk to just kind of fiddle with.
This is scale 1-to-1.
Oh yeah, exactly. And he's teeny tiny, like I was finally able to get my hands on the Walmart exclusives because they were on the Walmart website. Thanks to Marvelous Marvel News Twitter account saying that they were on the Walmart website. Finally got the Civil War, Captain America exclusives, Winter Soldier, Falcon, and the Silk figure I was looking for. And if you look at the scale, Wolverine is teeny tiny compared to regular size Bucky Winter Soldier.
Runt.
Yep. Seriously. So anyway, I'm sorry for the aside, but you know, I kind of wanted to remind everyone that as much as I love the Avengers and I love Cap and Spidey, X-Men was like the book that really kind of kept us all reading comics for a long time.
Unless you're an Avengers fan and you're on the right side of history.
Yeah, right. Oh, I'm not picking that one up. All right, moving on.
Doctor Strange opens with a magical $85 million. Michael Giacchino confirms he's scoring Spider-Man Homecoming. Big Hero 6 original voice cast returns for its new Disney XD animated series.
Most of them. But the good, you know, a good, you know, was it like 80% of them? Something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Voltron Solid Snake voice actor David Hayter script and live action movie.
That'd be interesting. He also wrote X2, which I'm hopefully not going to try to hold him to.
And the best news of the year.
Yes. Okay, hold on.
Young Justice is coming back for season 3. Get hyped.
That was pretty cool.
And it sounds like Vietti and Wiseman are both still are attached to it, which I don't see why that wouldn't have been the case.
Bring everyone back. I want the same art team, same voice cast, same writers, producers, directors, everyone.
That's awesome. That's awesome for you guys, man.
Yeah. And if you haven't checked it out, it is season 1 and 2 are still on Netflix. We'll check them out there.
Yep.
We don't know when this is going to happen. We just know it's going to happen.
Right. Well, obviously, animation does take time to produce. So
sure, but you still got to put it somewhere. Yeah, so
exactly.
I like some people theorizing that they should introduce Red Hood. That'd be a cool villain to use.
I don't know.
They could tie into like the missing 5 years that we missed. Do some flashbacks.
Well, I think. I mean,
has it been that long?
Well, because the last
between the first season and second season, that 5 years.
Oh
no, I thought it did do that, but because I mean, the last episode, if I remember correctly, took place a little bit of time after that season, and I think it might have been a year or two after that. And I think, and they pretty much established another team, so I feel like if they're gonna go with it, they're probably gonna go with that. I don't know.
Introduce Red Hood and show him in the flashbacks with the team during those 5 years.
I don't know.
Save the Universe or Watch It Burn in our new RPG show, Vest. What is that?
So, Geek and Sundry, which is the Felicia Day's YouTube channel and, and also channel. So, I won't, don't want to say friends of the show, but former guests of the show, Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, who both co-write Joyride, are in this show. So Jackson nice. Lansing is the game master of this show called Vast, which is a sci-fi RPG that apparently he and some other folks written. I don't know if Colin Kelly has anything to do with it, but this is an RPG that he wrote. So it's basically doing a sci-fi Dungeons & Dragons thing, live action. If you know Geek & Sundry and you know their other show, Critical Role, it's kind of that, except for the fact that it's, in this case, it is like, it's Jackson Lansing, Colin Kelly, Kate Leth, who you know is comics, Amy Dolan, who's is a very well-known internet celebrity, and a couple of other people, and they're playing this game, live, and they're going through the motions. I caught a little bit of it. It was pretty interesting. So Colin Kelly doing a little bit of acting, which I got a shot of, which I meant to show y'all, but it was kind of funny. But yeah, it's every Monday on the Geek & Sundry channel on Twitch, and I think this other channel apparently they're doing called Project Alpha, which I guess they're trying to get people to subscribe to or something. But if you want to check it out, every Monday night, I don't know when, but on the Geek & Sundry channel on Twitch, you can go check it out. And I think they do put the episodes out on YouTube and elsewhere later on.
So, okay.
Nice.
Legends of Tomorrow Season 2 extended by 4 episodes.
Yay.
Arrow, Supergirl, and Flash join forces in new Entertainment Weekly cover.
Nice cover.
Pacific Rim 2 gets an official name as it goes into production. Pacific Rim Maelstrom. Kevin Feige says titles of 2020 Marvel movies are spoilers.
Oh, boy.
I need to go back and read that.
That's fine. It's, most of the stuff that's listed in here are the ones that we already know about, and then everything else after that is untitled.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s Ghost Rider has a deal in place for possible spinoff, possibly Netflix. Spider-Man Homecoming, Zendaya on her not romantic but very cool character.
Does anyone else think this is a swerve?
Well, I just think that she's not a love interest in this movie.
Maybe.
Well, she's also supposedly not playing Mary Jane like people were saying. And apparently there may be another, and actually she's not the love interest because of the, I don't know if it's in that article and in the next article about another character. I may not even put that in, I don't remember. But there's another article about another character who's playing a love interest. And okay. I don't think people are going to be too, they didn't like the fact that she might have been playing Mary Jane because of her color of her skin, and I don't think they're going to like this one either, or haven't liked this one either for the same reason.
Meh. Tom Holland reveals how many Spider-Man movies he signed on for. Michael Keaton was confirmed as the Vulture.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's also, in that last article, there was a Zendaya and Tom Holland did a cover for The Hollywood Reporter, and they got a spread together. They look cute together. You should check it out.
Okay. Let's see. You said.
Oh, you just keep running with the regular news. Yeah.
Okay. In the comic news, comics publisher Double Take is shutting down at the end of the month. Venom is relaunching. Venom relaunch tops advance reorders.
Huh. Why?
Go figure.
Wait, what?
Venom relaunch, the relaunch of the Venom title tops advance reorders.
Oy, oy, oy.
There's a new lantern.
Because he's going back to his roots of the, tongue wagging, mouth huge, who's under the symbiote mystery.
Who cares?
That too. Miss Marvel says vote. Funko shares a first look at concept art for their Jessica Jones and Luke Cage pop vinyls. Marvel Pinball Conquers consoles.
Yeah, so this is all done. This is a package deal of the Marvel Pinball games. This has been out for a minute. So.
Marvel to publish Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko coloring books.
Ah, those should be wacky.
And Jim Starlin and Alan Davis to reteam for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yep, it's called Mother Entropy. Not sure what the story is going to be, but we saw some shots in that article.
Oh, is it going to be like a limited series?
Yeah, it's a 5-parter. Okay. Yeah.
And that's it for new. Oh, it's a variant cover.
Oh, yeah, the last two.
DC reveals series of young animal variant covers, and J. Scott Campbell's second Riri Williams drawing becomes a real exclusive variant.
Which I like that one. That was a cool looking one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Roddy was mentioning a story earlier that you hopped over. Go ahead, Roddy.
Oh, there's a new lantern.
Oh, wait a second. Hold on.
You just wanted to get that music in.
Yep.
That sound effect. Hit us with that last. Hit us with our last
The last ad read of the night. Okay, let us do, as I wait for it to load, Busted Tees. This episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles is brought to you by Busted Tees. It's sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 like Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, inspired by Star Wars The Force Awakens, and Samojis, the many faces of Samuel L. Jackson as emojis, and many more are always on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today. You guys are all on mute.
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at CBCron and at TheClickNation. Radicat is at Radicat and at NewsNerdsNeed. As he shows Black Panther face palming someone.
Stuffing him. Punching, yeah. Snuffing him.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the word.
He's snuffing him.
Captain America, aka Agent 70, is at Agent_70 on Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah.
And PCN Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. Again, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and sign up for our newsletter on the homepage, theclicknation.com.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week. We are the Click Nation, and we are signing off.
Hey! Baby, baby, baby!